Hollywood Scandals is part of the Dark Hollywood Collection in the Reels Files on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes each Thursday. Then go to Reels.com, check the top of the screen, and enter your zip code to find out how you can watch more chilling cases like this when you watch TV. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com for the dark crime series and specials you'll find only on Reels Channel.
The current culture of celebrity in Hollywood is to build people up as high as we can, and then for sport, throw them down.
Michael Jackson's celebrity was larger than life, and so were the scandalous relationships that forever tainted him.
You can't separate the man from the scandal. It just doesn't work that way.
From physical abuse as a child.
When he gave a beating with a belt, I mean, he was the buckle end.
To his unusual courtships.
Everyone thought it was a publicity stunt.
To his penchant for young boys.
Don't treat me like a criminal, because I am innocent.
Was the king of pop a child trapped in a man's body?
Part of him remained a child, and I don't think he had a problem with it.
Or a criminal?
You're probably in a pretty serious state of denial if you still think it didn't happen.
June 13th, 2005. The world gathers around their television sets to hear the verdicts in the Michael Jackson molestation trial. The king of pop's fate hangs in the balance, as the verdicts will determine, once and for all, the question everyone has had on their minds for years. What is the nature of Michael Jackson's relationships with young children?
45-year-old man having sleepovers with 9-year-old boys.
That is not criminal.
The jurors go back into the deliberation room and the waiting game starts.
Michael Jackson is arguably the most iconic entertainer the world has ever seen.
Mark Bago, author. Michael
Jackson, at the height of his career, was the most recognizable, most famous person on the entire planet.
And the most scandalous. The media relishes his odd behavior, his constantly changing appearance, and the drug addiction that leads to his death. But for many, Michael Jackson will forever be defined by his bizarre private relationships.
Dylan Howard, Editor-in-Chief, Radar Online.
He was a fixture for every tabloid because they couldn't predict the outlandish behavior. They would never be able to predict that he'd end up marrying Elvis's daughter, have a surrogate for two of his children. He would hold his child from a balcony roof.
The trial of the century is the culmination of Michael's unsettling associations, which have plagued him his entire adult life, and all stem from his childhood. A time he continually tries to recreate. At the age of 6, Michael Jackson takes the world stage as the lead singer for the Jackson 5.
Cynthia Horner, Editor-in-Chief, Hip Hop Weekly.
I was the editor of Right On Magazine, which was a magazine created because of the phenomenon of the Jackson 5. When the Jackson 5 came out on Motown, they started having a lot of hits.
Dorian Holly, vocal director, the This Is It tour.
Who didn't love the Jackson 5? I grew up wanting to be, you know, in the Jackson 5.
He was definitely the focal point in the group. All eyes were on little Michael Jackson.
But the responsibilities of fronting a superstar act come at a cost.
Practice, practice, practice. That's really all the Jackson 5 ever did. They weren't out playing with their friends very often at all. They were inside rehearsing all the time. Their dad wanted them to be sharp. He wanted them to be able to earn money.
Dr. Romani Durvasula, clinical psychologist.
What that ended up resulting in for him was it put undue pressure on him. No 7 or 8 year old should have to wonder what role they play in the family's finances.
As the most talented of the group, young Michael bears the brunt of the financial burden and his father's iron fist.
We were nervous rehearsing because he sat in the chair and he had this bell in his hand. And if you didn't do it the right way, he would tear you up, really get you.
Randall Sullivan, author, Untouchable.
Joe Jackson was a failed musician. He was working the night shift as a crane operator at a steel mill. But he still maintained this sort of dream of success in music. He'd kind of abandoned it for himself, but he saw that his sons had some ability. He drove them relentlessly.
If there had not been a Joe Jackson, there would not be a Michael Jackson or any other Jackson. You have to have that discipline.
But some see Joe Jackson's discipline as the root of Michael's stunted growth and troubled relationships later in life.
He would lose his temper. I just remember hearing my mother scream, "Joe, you're going to kill him. You're going to kill him." I mean, scared. So scared that I would regurgitate.
He was sadistic and selfish and greedy. And he wounded all of his children, but especially the most sensitive one, deeply. You know, when he gave him a beating with a belt, I mean, he was the buckle end.
Dr. Judy Ho, clinical psychologist.
And our parents are supposed to be people that love us and that care for us and show us a model of unconditional love. Instead, his father showed him terror and fear.
So I think that he grew up this sort of fearful child that he never stopped being.
Michael Jackson's distorted view of love develops at home, but becomes even more confusing for the child prodigy when the Jackson 5 hits the road.
Their first gigs were in strip clubs. So Michael is 6 years old, standing in the wings, watching some woman strip totally and then throw her underwear out into the crowd and passing around and sniffing them. And he's watching this, unable to comprehend it.
His brothers enjoyed all these girls running after them, and the fans would find their way into the hotel rooms and they'd hide in the closets.
He's sharing rooms with his brothers and they're having sex with the groupies basically next to him in bed. He actually would, like, talk to some of these groupies and try to get them not to sleep with his brothers, and with tears in his eyes, "Don't do this to yourself." He's prepubescent, being bombarded with, you know, this kind of raw sexuality. And so he recoiled from that and began developing a very idealized, romanticized view of sex, but it was also kind of an antiseptic view of sex.
Michael Jackson's early exposure to adult situations leads him to long for a more normal childhood.
Sarah Churchwell, professor, University of East Anglia.
I don't think he felt like he had anybody who understood him. He didn't hang out with anybody his own age. He hung out with only people older than him. And he was asked to behave like somebody who was older.
Michael's most poignant memory was when he was in the studio. The windows happened to face out on a playground, and he would see the kids on the merry-go-round. And I'm just like, oh, if I could only have that life.
As Michael grows into an adult, he desperately tries to relive the childhood his father forced him to abandon.
There was this sense that he had got kind of stunted emotionally, psychologically, and that somehow he just got trapped.
He forever held on to that boyhood. It was like he never wanted to grow up and become a man in any way.
Not wanting to become a man means not dating. And Michael's lack of a female significant other creates media speculation about his sexuality.
People had been whispering about Michael anyway because there was a delicacy to the way he presented himself. The romance with Tatum O'Neill, you know, was supposed to combat that.
Michael Jackson meets actress Tatum O'Neill in the late 70s when he is 17 and she is 12. In order to project the image of a normal man, Michael begins calling her his girlfriend. But some question the validity of his claims.
My first girlfriend was Tatum O'Neill, but I don't think I was ready for some of the things he was talking about. I was pretty naive, I'm not joking.
Word really got out because of this party at Rod Stewart's house where reportedly Tatum O'Neill tried to get Michael into bed and Michael fled. And, you know, it was a public scene. You know, he left the house in tears, and a lot of people saw it, wondered, what does that mean?
Sometimes he seemed asexual, and then other times he was very interested in girls. One day I came over to his home, and he said, I want to show you some photos of someone. This is the most beautiful girl in the whole world. And it turned out to be Brooke Shields. And she was absolutely stunning. Michael started collecting photos of her, and eventually the two became friends.
But when Brooke accompanies Michael to the Grammy Awards in 1984, it creates a media scandal for all the wrong reasons. The king of pop seems more interested in someone else.
At the Grammy Awards, he would go with her, but he'd have Emmanuel Lewis, the Webster kid, sitting on his lap. I think it was fairly obvious by then to everybody that the whole thing with Brooke Shields was, you know, a friendship at best and not a romantic relationship.
I was on a ski trip with Brooke Shields years after the famous dates that he went on with Brooke. She said my mother and his manager put that together. So I think all of those supposed affairs with Tatum O'Neill and with Brooke Shields were all for show.
Michael Jackson continues his relationships with women, at least in the public eye.
Showing up at the 1991 Academy Awards with Madonna on his arm. Like, what would she be doing with Michael Jackson? Here are the two biggest publicity whores on the planet.
But privately, he prefers to spend his time with children.
Michael Jackson enjoyed the company of children more than adults because he felt that children would not judge him.
Part of him remained a child, and I don't think he had a problem with it.
He proceeded to turn his entire adult life into a life of a child. I just think he was going back and trying to get the thing that he wanted, which was to be a kid.
At the time, a lot of people saw it as kind of cute and charming, but an indication that he thought of himself as a child in some ways. And then it started to turn a lot more darkly when allegations of molestation were made.
August 21st, 1993. Police officers perform a surprise raid at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch. It is the first episode in a child molestation saga that will investigate whether Michael's friendships with children are purely innocent or something more sinister. In 1988, Michael Jackson buys Neverland Ranch, a sprawling 3,000-acre property in Santa Barbara County, named after the island home of Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, to me, represents something that's very special in my heart. You know, he represents childhood, never growing up. I am Peter Pan.
There was so much truth to the whole Peter Pan metaphor for him. He really was a child rather than an adult. This was the environment that reflected his whole Peter Pan-dom, his determination to, you know, remain a child, to live as a child, to recover his own innocence, and to protect and cherish the innocence of others.
He wanted to create his own kingdom where he could go and have his friends go, and he could have whatever he wanted there.
At the time, a lot of people saw it as kind of cute and charming, but an indication that he thought of himself as a child in some ways. And then it started to turn a lot more darkly when allegations of molestation were made.
In 1992, Michael Jackson meets 12-year-old Jordan Chandler. The two quickly become close friends. Perhaps too close.
The real come together for Jordy Chandler and Michael Jackson was at his stepfather's business, a rent-a-rec company. Michael Jackson's car had broken down and went in to rent a car, and the rest is history.
To say that Michael got obsessed with Jordy Chandler, I don't think is an exaggeration. I mean, it reached the point where Jordy would come home from school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and Michael would call within 5 minutes after he walked in the door, and they'd be on the phone for hours.
I just knew he liked being around him, and the family thought it was okay for them to be able to be around each other. Michael would take him to concerts, and he got to go with him everywhere after a while as a little companion.
The family got close to Michael. He treated the mother on trips to Las Vegas and Monte Carlo, bought her jewelry. There were a lot of visits to Neverland.
But in time, the family changes their tune.
The father, Evan, claimed that he walked into the bedroom and saw Michael and Jordy in the same bed spooning. It was disturbing to him, and then he began to press and investigate and came to the conclusion that there really was a sexual relationship here.
After initially denying his father's suspicions, Jordan Chandler eventually confesses that Michael Jackson sexually molested him.
Allegedly, the father, who was a dentist turned scriptwriter, brought his son into a dental office where he was given sodium amytal. And the allegations were that the father did this and that the father may have influenced the son to believe he had been molested.
Sodium amytal is used oftentimes to induce some memories. Unfortunately, it can also lead to certain delusions. But once our brain is convinced that it's a memory, a real memory and a fake memory feels the same to us.
But not everyone agrees that the drug was used to induce Jordan's memories of sexual abuse.
There is no evidence that sodium amytal was used. I talked with the anesthesiologist. I looked at paperwork. You need to have federal paperwork to use sodium amytal. There was no such thing. That just did not happen.
Evan Chandler threatens to take Michael Jackson to court unless he pays him $20 million.
This man is going to be humiliated beyond belief. He will not sell one more record. If I go through with this, I win big time. I will get everything I want. They will be destroyed forever.
Instead of saying, we have to go to the police, he went to a lawyer, a friend of his, and said, here's what I want. I want $20 million and or I want a screenplay deal with Michael Jackson footing the bill. Now, this is not a typical reaction to hearing that your son has been molested. And in the end, it came back to make him look like an extortionist.
After Jackson refuses to pay, Evan brings his son's allegations to the police. Michael Jackson is about to be placed in the most vulnerable position of his life.
The district attorney of Santa Barbara County, Mr. Tom Sneddon, was putting a full-court press to investigate Michael Jackson based upon Mr. Chandler's allegations, and in the process received a court order, as I understand it, to photograph Mr. Jackson's genitals at Neverland so that Mr. Chandler's descriptions could be compared to the forensic evidence.
Believing that he is the victim of false accusations, and fearing that his love of children is being misconstrued, a shaken Michael Jackson goes on the offensive at a live press conference from Neverland Ranch.
I have been forced to submit to a dehumanizing and humiliating examination by the Santa Barbara County Sheriff Department and the Los Angeles Police Department earlier this week. They served a search warrant on me which allowed them to view and photograph my body, including my penis, my buttocks, my lower torso, thighs, and any other area that they wanted. Don't treat me like a criminal, because I am innocent.
But the media is convinced that Jordan's description paints Michael as anything but innocent.
According to Jordy Chandler, he had white patches or pinkish patches on his genitals. You could only see them when Michael Jackson was in an aroused state. I got some internal police records that prove there was such a mark on Michael Jackson's genitals. Jordy described it exactly.
But there is one key piece of evidence that doesn't match.
The main difference between Jordy's description and the physical reality was that Jordy had described Michael as circumcised, and Michael was in fact uncircumcised.
Everybody this way for me? Mr. Jackson, two. Three.
I don't remember exactly what it was that Jordan Chandler said about that. Understand anybody's ability to describe a physical anomaly is challenging. You're probably in a pretty serious state of denial if you think it didn't happen.
The media aggressively debates the accuracy of Jordan's description. Michael Jackson is humiliated. But the molestation scandal is about to get even worse.
On top of everything else that was coming at him, Michael had to deal with the fact that his sister LaToya was holding a press conference to say that, you know, he really was a child molester.
I must tell you that this is very difficult for me, that Michael is my brother. I love him a great deal, but I cannot and I will not be a silent collaborator of his crimes against small, innocent children.
She was willing to tell the whole story for a price. It turned out she had nothing to sell, and it sort of went away, but it didn't change the fact that now that was just that much more evidence in the media's mind that this was true.
The scandal of LaToya Jackson's public accusation eventually dissipates. But what Michael Jackson does next causes some to question whether he really does have something to cover up.
It's hush money. It's go-away money.
Is there a monetary settlement involved in this?
Why did he go to such lengths, paying $20 to $30 million to pay off the first boy? If you're innocent, that's not what you do.
He is an innocent man who does not intend to have his career and his life destroyed by rumors and innuendos.
Michael Jackson should never have settled that case. He was advised to do that by lawyers and other people around him, none of whom were writing the check. And they wanted to just get this whole chapter closed so he could move on to lucrative business opportunities.
Despite settling the civil case, Michael Jackson isn't off the hook yet. He is still under grand jury investigations in Santa Barbara and Los Angeles counties, which could lead to criminal charges and a trial. But the prosecution's star witness is nowhere to be found.
It became obvious that we weren't going to be able to commence a criminal prosecution without Jordan, and we didn't have him after that settlement. I mean, Jordan Chandler became, overnight, one of the richest 13-year-old boys in America.
Once a grand jury is convened, 99% of the time, there's criminal charges. You don't have to produce much evidence, just some evidence. And these juries concluded that there was no evidence.
In the eyes of the law, Michael Jackson is innocent. Still, many believe where there's smoke, there's fire. And the stigma of child molestation follows the singer like a letter branded on his back. Michael decides on a public image makeover. But it will only lead to another scandal.
His marriage with Lisa Marie Presley, everyone thought it was a publicity stunt.
May 26th, 1994. The King of Pop marries the daughter of the King of Rock and Roll, Lisa Marie Presley. For the first time in his life, Michael Jackson seems ready to settle down and start a family of his own. But this union will prove to be a scandal that dominates the headlines.
Did you know you can stream Reel's Dark Hollywood programs like this on Roku, Fire TV, and Amazon channels? Well, you can. Just download the Reel's app to subscribe. Or check out Reel's on Tubi, Samsung TV Plus, Vizio, and Zumo. Hollywood Scandals comes from the Dark Hollywood fans at Reel's channel. To find Reel's in your area, go to Reel's.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen, enter your zip code, and begin enjoying great TV.
Michael Jackson is first introduced to Lisa Marie Presley in 1974 by her father, Elvis Presley, when he is 16 and she is 6. But their adult relationship does not begin until 1992, in the midst of the Jordan Chandler affair.
It was a professional thing for her. She thought he could help her career. Why did he marry her? Well, you know, Lisa Marie's mother, Priscilla Presley, said he married her because he was trying to, you know, cover his tracks after the Jordan Chandler affair. I mean, the relationship coincided with that scandal.
The timing of the wedding seems too convenient. Few believe the marriage is real.
Word began to get out of, you know, what the circumstances of the marriage were. the justice of the peace who performed it said it was so odd and somber. He not only didn't kiss the bride, he didn't touch her.
Everyone thought it was a publicity stunt. And that was sort of unilaterally accepted. And any media that tried to put it out there as a legitimate marriage seemed almost like, you know, disconnected from the truth.
It's all a cover-up from the little child thing. That's what I think it is.
We've seen it all before, haven't we, really?
The couple fails to convince the world they are in love. And behind closed doors, the marriage is quickly falling apart.
She was sincerely trying to make this real, but she got exhausted by the situation. They were living in separate houses, still married though. And he would come over supposedly to get together, but he'd have two or three kids with him, and they'd be running all over the house and screaming.
At the 1994 MTV Video Music Awards, Lisa Marie's frustration with Michael reaches a breaking point.
They were separated, divorce seemed inevitable, but she'd agreed to accompany him to this event. But right as they were preparing to walk in, be on stage, he said, I'm going to give you this passionate kiss. And she goes, no, you're not. You can't do that.
The kiss was so awkward. There was just something very uncomfortable and unnatural about it. It didn't seem like two people who were in love.
It was a staged kiss. Michael Jackson, who thought he was still a 13-year-old boy, was almost embarrassed by it.
After just 19 months of marriage, Lisa Marie Presley files for divorce from Michael Jackson, his final demand being one she refuses to meet.
What really dissolved it was he wanted a child, and she suspected that, you know, he wanted a child that would be Elvis Presley's grandchild, and that it was going to end up being, you know, the nightmare custody battle of all time, and so she wouldn't go along with it.
But Michael Jackson still hopes for children of his own to recreate the childhood he never had. And more scandal is on the horizon when he turns to longtime friend Debbie Rowe.
She said you needed to be a daddy.
Mm-hmm.
More than she needed to be a mother.
Yeah. And she wanted to do that for me as a present.
Debbie Rowe is working for Arnold Klein, who was Michael's dermatologist. When she found out that he was frustrated and angry that Lisa Marie wouldn't agree to have a child, she said, well, I will.
He wanted control. And he wanted direct access to these children at all times. So the best way to do it is to make a business arrangement with somebody so that you get what you want out of the deal.
In November 1996, just months after his divorce from Lisa Marie Presley, Debbie Rowe becomes Michael's second wife. And in the next couple of years, bears two of Michael's children, Prince and Paris.
It was understood that she was being a kind of surrogate, yet she was willing to marry him. I mean, and really, you know, she really liked being Michael Jackson's wife, even though they never spent a single night in the same bedroom.
He decided that if he had his own biological children, he could legitimately hang out with children more. The marriage to Debbie Rowe, the children that he had who looked nothing like him at all, only forced more skepticism into the eyes of the public.
Michael and Debbie's marriage quietly comes to an end in 1999. But Michael isn't done creating his unconventional family. In 2002, he announces the birth of his third child, Prince Michael Jackson II. Michael calls him Blanket.
I used a surrogate mother, and she doesn't know me. I don't know her.
He was born at a hospital in San Diego to a surrogate mother who's never been identified. Two of Michael's older female friends whisk this child away from that hospital almost immediately after birth.
In 2004, 2 years after Blanket is born, Debbie Rowe makes a shocking revelation about Michael Jackson's first two children.
Debbie Rowe is saying there is no biological relationship between Michael and the children, Prince and Paris. It was pretty obvious to everybody that there was no biological relation just by looking at them, but it was a devastating psychological and emotional blow to Prince and Paris.
Yet Michael continues to claim that he is the father to all three of his children.
I used my own sperm cells. I had my own sperm cells in my other two children.
No one knows, you know, who the biological father of those two children is, but Debbie definitely was the biological mother. No one knows who either the father or the mother of Blanket is.
Michael Jackson's public lies about his private life only wreak further havoc and speculation.
It didn't have anything to do with Michael's, I don't think, potency or ability to father children. There's a lot of different things that people could say about why. I think the truest one is that Michael didn't want children that look like Joe.
He made a very deliberate decision to not raise children the way that he was raised, with a strong hand. And I think that he succeeded.
The creation of a new family allows Michael Jackson to escape the family dynamic that stunted him as a child. But even with a family of his own, the King of Pop continues to surround himself with other people's children.
The question was and remains whether that was an emotional need or a sexual need.
November 19th, 2003. Santa Barbara County Sheriff Jim Anderson and District Attorney Tom Snedden hold a press conference before a crowd of journalists.
An arrest warrant for Mr. Jackson has been issued on multiple counts of child molestation.
Ten years after the Jordan Chandler allegations, just as Michael was trying to create the perfect childhood for his children, he finds himself once again in the crosshairs of Santa Barbara District Attorney Tom Snedden.
I always felt it was very much of a vendetta by District Attorney Tom Snedden. I was informed that in the mid-1990s, he personally traveled to Australia and Canada looking for alleged victims and couldn't find them, and that at his direction, the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Department had what we called an open casting call for anyone who wanted to come and give information against Michael Jackson.
Snedden eventually finds another accuser that levels charges of molestation against Michael. And it's thanks in large part to the documentary Living with Michael Jackson by journalist Martin Bashir.
Martin Bashir was very clever in his seduction of Michael Jackson. By the time Bashir met Michael, he knew that Michael had this fascination bordering on obsession with Princess Diana.
Mr. Bashir represented to Michael Jackson that he had done a very authoritative biography of Princess Diana. And when Michael Jackson heard that, he trusted Mr. Bashir to be very honest and professional at all times. That was a grave mistake. It was probably the biggest mistake he ever made in his life.
Some people think that Martin Bashir was out to get Jackson. On the other hand, Jackson gave him an awful lot of ammunition.
Michael agrees to take part in the documentary in an attempt to stage a career comeback.
Michael actually thought he was on the brink of a renaissance. He was going to sort of recover the superstar status that he really hadn't had since the Chandler affair broke.
From May 2002 to January 2003, Martin Bashir is given unprecedented access to Michael Jackson. But instead of focusing on Jackson's music career, he and his producers focus on capturing Scandal.
It's okay, just get this off.
Oh, please don't cry, brother.
After Scandal.
The dangling baby incident was a big moment because it was a moment when Michael really felt the world turn against him. Nobody defended him for the baby dangling incident.
It was this really, really poor decision-making that happened because he was trying to please everybody that was there. Michael is the ultimate people pleaser. It's where he gets his validation. And I can just imagine as a child, that's how he was with his family.
But the biggest scandal in the documentary is yet to come. And it will give Tom Snedden the break he's been looking for. Because of its implications, the face of the accuser has been subsequently removed from future airings of the documentary.
During a documentary done by Martin Bashir, Michael Jackson said that to share his bed with a young boy was the most beautiful thing in the world. The question was and remains whether that was an emotional need or a sexual need.
I saw nothing inherently wrong with that scene. If you look at all the outtakes that were not included in that show, Michael Jackson is very adamant that he never would ever harm a child, and he was simply talking in a very kind way.
Living with Michael Jackson airs in February 2003 to a worldwide audience of over 40 million. and it reignites the public's concerns about Michael's relationships with children.
The Bashir documentary comes out, and the whole world is horrified. Sneddon holds a press conference, and this is very disturbing, and we're certainly going to look into this matter. And then, through the incredibly convoluted process that followed, eventually he had a case.
Months after the documentary airs, the accuser alleges that Michael Jackson sexually molested him. A team of sheriff's investigators, led by District Attorney Tom Sneddon, raid Neverland Ranch in search of evidence that Michael Jackson is a pedophile.
Okay, that's locked.
His room was filled with sexually explicit magazines and books and materials. Some of them were oriented toward children. The kids had told us that these magazines were shown to them. We found their fingerprints on them.
There were a couple of books that were sent to Michael Jackson unsolicited. One was a homoerotic set of photographs sent to him by a world-famous photographer in Italy. There was another book called The Life of a Boy in Pictures. They also found a huge amount of Playboy and Penthouse magazines. The prosecution tried to turn that around and say that he used Playboy and Penthouse magazine to groom young children for molestation.
Michael Jackson is arrested. If found guilty of all counts, he will spend the rest of his life in prison. In January 2005, the people of the state of California versus Michael Joseph Jackson begins. The media dubs it the trial of the century. Inside the courtroom, the defense calls witnesses, including Wade Robson and Macaulay Culkin, who all claim nothing inappropriate ever occurred between them and Michael Jackson. Jordan Chandler again refuses to testify, and the prosecution's case is quickly falling apart.
We didn't have adequate corroboration. I think that the absence of the other children who could have come forward, that hurt us. I think the celebrity factor was profound.
The prosecution's timeline of when the acts of molestation occurred also presents problems.
They'd initially stated times molestations took place, but it came out that Michael Jackson had a rock-solid alibi for those dates. Well, then the prosecution amended that to say that the molestations took place right after the Bashir documentary aired.
What they were trying to argue was that the Bashir documentary took place, that there was a firestorm of criticism around the world over that documentary, and they claim that in the middle of all of this, he started molesting young boys. It was absurd.
For nearly 5 months, the trial drags on. And while the world waits in anticipation of a verdict, some in the media have already made up their minds.
He has a tendency to pick out very vulnerable children.
We know nothing. Maybe the letters say, I love you, get well soon.
People in the media invested their entire careers on seeing a conviction.
June 13th, 2005. The media announces that the jury in the People of the State of California versus Michael Joseph Jackson has reached a verdict.
I remember that day so vividly. There were helicopters overhead. Lawyers were coming from everywhere. We were gathering in the courtroom waiting for this verdict. It was one of the most tense times I've ever waited for a verdict. And believe me, I've waited for a lot of verdicts.
The whole world was watching. People in every world capital stopped what they were doing, looked at their TV sets, listened to their radios, looked at their computers to see what was going to happen to Michael Jackson.
I went back to Tom Sneddon, the district attorney, before the verdicts were read, and I told him what my expectation was, and that's what happened.
The world waits in anticipation as the jury foreman reads the verdicts to the 14 counts against Michael Jackson.
We, the jury in the above-entitled case, find the defendant not guilty of conspiracy as charged in count one of the indictment.
He was found not guilty, completely exonerated. It was quite a moment in the courtroom, I'll tell you. Tom Snedden had never lost a case until this one.
I would say the verdict was not the right verdict, but I tend not to second-guess juries' verdicts. It's not the first not guilty I've had in my 34 years as a prosecutor. It may not even be the last one.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I just see 2 + 2 = 4.
Some in the media are shocked.
People in the media invested their entire careers on seeing a conviction. They weren't there to report objectively. They were there to report in a way which would get them the result they wanted that would further their careers.
Despite winning the case, Michael Jackson is beaten down by the scandal.
I must say that he looked terrible that day. He looked very, very weak. He looked very, he'd lost a lot of weight. His cheeks were sunken in. He didn't want to talk too much.
And many still refuse to believe that he is an innocent man.
If you were to do a straw poll on the street, I'm convinced that the majority of people would believe that something inappropriate took place.
There's an interesting fact that once you've made up your mind, it takes 13 different facts that go in the opposite direction before you can start to be swayed or convinced. So I think once people made up their mind that Michael Jackson was a sexual predator or a pedophile, they weren't going to change their minds at all.
The sensational reporting of the trial and Martin Bashir's documentary, Living with Michael Jackson, convinced many that Michael was a child molester. But after the verdict, it's the media coverage that becomes scandalous.
We talk about the media as if it's a collective body, and it's easy to forget that we're talking about individual people and that reporters and journalists are no different from the rest of us, except that they're covering the story.
History will look at the Bashir documentary as being a fine piece of journalism. No journalist would have such unfettered access to a celebrity at the center of scandal and not frame it in the way that he and his producers ultimately did.
I came out of this with a very low opinion of Martin Bashir, which was shared by the jury when they actually got to see all the outtakes, all the ways in which Bashir had flattered and manipulated Michael Jackson. It was all this great stuff that would have made Michael Jackson look like a far more sympathetic and interesting and unique person. All that was cut out, and everything was focused on Michael Jackson the freak, Michael Jackson the pedophile.
Man, if I could get a hold of Martin Bashir, I'd probably break some bones. I don't have a lot of respect for him. Oh.
My brother, the legendary king of pop, Michael Jackson, passed away on Thursday, June 25th, 2009 at 2:26 p.m.
In 2009, 4 years after the trial, Michael Jackson dies from a drug overdose administered by his personal physician, Dr. Conrad Murray. Though Michael Jackson is dead, the molestation scandals that plagued him are very much alive. In 2013, a familiar face comes forward with a shocking new allegation.
Wade Robson now says that he was molested for at least 7 years by Michael Jackson. You know, Wade Robson was the defense attorney's key witness. Well, now, all these years forward, Wade Robson says, I was lying on the stand. I was molested, and it has affected me so deeply, I had not one but two nervous breakdowns. And now he is suing the Jackson estate.
By starting our case with Wade Robson, we were starting with a very powerful witness who was adamant that Michael Jackson had never inappropriately touched him at any time, in any manner. And to have him this many years later, with Michael Jackson passed away and unable to respond, to have him come out and change his story, I find very unacceptable.
The continuing molestation scandals cast a shadow of doubt about just who the real Michael Jackson was. To some, his bizarre relationships were signs of a predatory monster. To others, an innocent child trapped in a man's body. In either scenario, Michael Jackson's troubled upbringing created a man unwilling or unable to leave his childhood behind.
I think Michael is a textbook case for why childhood is really the most important thing in our adult trajectory. In his mind, he was a child. And I've always believed that when there was a lot of media about him possibly acting inappropriately with these children, that he wasn't really doing it from the mind of an adult.
I never believed that he felt he was a kid trapped in a man's body. That's what he used to say, but I think he had a pretty good understanding of who he was.
You can't separate the man from the scandal. It just doesn't work that way, especially since it's such an egregious scandal. It wasn't like, you know, someone stole $1,000. It's like you stole some children's innocence.
All the controversies and scandals and the greed-soaked aftermath of Michael's death is continuing to play out like an epilogue. But once that does play out, I think people will start to remember Michael Jackson mainly as an artist, and his influence as an artist will be what counts.
Hollywood Scandals comes from the Dark Hollywood Collection at Reels Channel. To get more like this when you watch TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen and enter your zip code to find us on your system. You'll also find extras from the latest Real Crime programs that are only on Reels. Find Hollywood Scandals and its companions on Roku and Fire TV, too.